Okay. House Judiciary is called to order. It's 2:10. It's the 24th of April. Present for the record, we have Representatives Gruenberg, Cott, Guerra, Coghill, Wilson, and myself, McGuire. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We have three items on the agenda today. We're going to start with Senate Bill 12, then we're going to go to Senate Bill 273, and then Senate Bill 249. So without further ado, tell us about Senate Bill 12.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason Hooley, staff to Senator Dyson. Senate Bill 12 addresses the international disgrace of human trafficking. And sadly, this problem has even infiltrated our relatively enlightened nation and even our state. And what our bill does is reference a federal report that occurs annually called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And that report ranks the countries of the world according to their stance regarding sex trafficking, human trafficking, and our bill imposes procurement restrictions on those countries that are headquartered in those the most egregious countries that are listed on Tier 3 of the report. That's my brief description, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
Sure, great idea. It's open for cross-sponsorship. I don't see any flaws in the bill.
Anybody else? Representative Crockett.
Just a question on the most recent published report. Are they published annually? Or?
Yes, sir. Okay. They're published annually through the U.S. State Department.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that it even has infiltrated into our state. Do you have any kind of scenarios that you can tell us what's happened?
Yes, briefly. I spoke with some of the special assignment unit members in the Anchorage Police Department, and they have a little experience with some of the massage parlors and related trafficking of Asian women from the Asian Far East. Supposedly, some of these women are promised lucrative careers and kind of held and forced to do sex acts and stuff like that. It's not a real big problem in Alaska, according to some of our experts, but it does occur a little bit.
I think part of the question that I heard her asking was, have we noticed our procurement supporting those various different countries from what we've said at this point?
The Chair, representatives, that there should be very little impact on our procurement through all three branches of our government. We don't currently do business very much with any organizations that are operating in these Tier 3 countries.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Anybody here in the audience to testify on Senate Bill 12? Anybody online? Okay, hearing none. Public testimony is closed. Is there a committee discussion or a motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Guerra.
I just had one question about the bill.
Okay.
I had heard, and I've got a note sitting here, but I don't see it, that that enforcement of this provision might be optional as opposed to mandatory. Is there some language in there that makes this only optional?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, if the organization is headquartered in a Tier 3 country, the bill says that we are prohibited from procuring goods or services from that outfit. If the organization is not necessarily headquartered in a Tier 3 country but does business there, we may set up provisions for restricting that.
Does it allow us to not set up provisions for restricting that? What I want to make sure is, even if the company is not headquartered in one of those countries, if they're making money in one of those countries, even if they're an American company, they fall under this also. So will they fall under something, or can we optionally not regulate them?
According to the current language, we are not required to cut off business with a country that merely does business in a Tier 3 country.
What I would like to do is, I don't have the amendment language ready, and I haven't had a chance to speak to Senator Dyson, but if you could let him know that on the House floor, I am going to consider an amendment to make it mandatory for those companies, and if he might have some input on drafting language, or you might have some input on drafting language, I'd appreciate it. He could certainly try and talk me out of it. That's why I don't want to do it on the fly from here, but my instinct is that I don't really care where the company is headquartered. If they're making money off this kind of conduct, they should be sanctioned.
Representative Gruenberg and the
Cobb? In the House State Affairs Committee, I had such language, as I recall, did I not? This is what my amendment said, is that has, after that has headquarters, comma, is incorporated in, comma, is established in, comma, or is owned or whole in, and or is owned in whole or in major part by a person residing in. And I was talked out of that because I think that they felt maybe the ownership thing was more cumbersome. But I would ask.
Do you have a response, Mr. Hui?
I don't recall the discussion on the amendment, but I do know that there are a number of businesses and organizations that the state of Alaska does business with who don't have headquarters in but do conduct business in Tier 3 countries. A lot of the oil companies, for instance, do business in Venezuela. And Venezuela is a country that is either in or nearly in the most in the Tier 3. That's one example. It was hoped that when we drafted it this way, we could hopefully use those countries who are situated there to have some kind of positive impact.
Further questions or discussion at this time?
Yeah, I would, through the chair, I would certainly support such an amendment. But I was saying, Representative Guerra, through the chair, that I had offered such an amendment. Well, the language was that is incorporated in, has headquarters in, is established in, or is owned in whole or in major part by a person residing in. And I think that they felt that was too broad, but if you can craft something that is,
I think I could. I think it has a physical presence in, or if they're either headquartered there or has a physical presence. I suppose if they're doing internet sales that go through there, that's okay. But
the testimony through the chair, the testimony was, as I recall it, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, that that these companies have several headquarters, some of them. And so they may have headquarters in other countries and a headquarters, let's say, in Venezuela too, or something. Frankly, I don't have any problem with the whole thing, but that was what the objection.
Representative Cott?
Was.
I think, Madam Chair, that Representative Guerra just answered my question. I wasn't sure if he wanted to restrict or prohibit us doing business with any company in the United States that may be doing business with another one of those Tier 3 countries. But it seems to me that listening to you, Representative Guerra, that it'd have to be a little bit less than that stringent of requirement. And just purely because they're doing internet sales in Venezuela doesn't get them on the blackball list, if you will.
That's right. I'll work on it, but I think I'm gonna just limit it to those who have headquarters there or a physical location there, as opposed to somebody who just does pass through business, which would be too broad a sweep. But I'll work on something.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Further questions,
Chair?
Representative Carkill.
I think the language now says prohibition is from those that have headquarters in a country listed in Tier 3. And even that probably could be an issue. You get IBM who has a headquarter in each country, and yet you talking about corporate headquarters or a franchise headquarters that it flies under that brand I guess Coca-Cola would be just as much an issue as British Petroleum. You know, so I wouldn't mind talking about the headquarters, but then I think every toothpaste manufacturer would do business probably in places like this, and I don't know that we want to have a procurement of toilet paper and toothpaste and, you know, all the toiletry issues that we get, whether it's Listerine or whatever, prohibited from procurement just simply because they market in those countries.
Okay. Is it your intent, Representative Gehr, to offer an amendment at this time or to wait?
Madam Chair, I'm going to wait. I guess I would, though I think I do disagree with the Majority Leader. I think if we're going to take a stand against companies that make money off of this sort of conduct, human trafficking and slavery, we're not really going to take a stand, because in those countries there are no real multinational companies of any consequence that we do business with. So the question is, are we going to take a stand against companies that are making money off of those countries in a substantial way? And if it's Coca-Cola, so be it. I'll have an amendment on the floor. I'll discuss it with the sponsor to come up with something that's narrow.
Okay. Is there a motion to move this bill out?
Representative Gruenberg? I see that there is a concurrent resolution draft here. Was that going to be dropped in by the State Affairs Committee?
I believe so.
You're following up on
yes,
that?
Yes, sir. Okay. The title change?
Yeah. So we don't have to worry about that here. Okay. I move the bill with individual reference.
Okay, is there an objection to moving Senate Bill number 12 with individual recommendations and attach fiscal notes out of this committee? Okay, hearing none, Senate Bill 12 moves. Thank you, Mr. Hui.
Thank you.
Okay, next up we have Senate Bill number 273, and we have the sponsor's representative, Mr. McKinster, one of my favorite staffers. Welcome to
House
Judiciary.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Ryan McKinster. I'm staff to Senator John Cowdery. Basically, this bill is somewhat kind of a fix. A couple years ago, there was a concern with gray market vehicles coming from Canada to be sold here, and some were purported to be sold as having warranties and other things. After review, which was required by the last bill change, the Department of Law went back and looked at it and realized that problem wasn't as far-reaching as they thought it was. And also, they came to find out that this language used in the previous bill, actually the change of the statute, was a little far-reaching and was not really conducive to consumer protection, which was the intent of the bill. Basically, what this bill does is remove the phrase current model from AS 866-15A and then removes Section B. Basically, how this statute change works, if it was to be implemented, which it's not. Currently, the Department of Law is not actually enforcing the current statute. If this was the case, a person couldn't sell a used current model vehicle. We'd have to wait till the new models came out. That obviously caused a problem for a couple people, not only the auto dealers, because they have to hold a car that they got back on lease or a forfeiture, or just a reason someone wanted a new car. They'd have to hold it until the next current model year comes out. Obviously, that's a detriment to the auto dealers, but it's a detriment to consumers as well. A consumer that, for whatever case, wanted to return a car, possibly they wanted to upgrade, possibly they wanted to downgrade. They realized, you know, they got in a little over their head. Well, it really limits their ability to trade that in, because a dealer is not going to want to hold the car for 6 to 8 months until the current model vehicle comes out. So under this current way statute is written, it really harms consumers, it harms auto dealers, new and used, and this change basically allows those current model vehicles to be sold basically by anybody. Right now, how the law is written, nobody can actually sell those vehicles until the next year's model comes out. Sometimes that's a three-month window, sometimes it's a six-month window. It could be even longer, depending on individual manufacturers when they release their cards. And just to give a little background, too, this actually has been worked on a couple times. There's probably, I think, three or four bills in circulation specifically dealing with this right now, try to come up with new language each time. And I think this is the first time we've actually gotten new car dealers, used car dealers, and the Department of Law's consumer advocate, Ed Sniffen, all together and kind of come up with some language everybody can be comfortable with that does fix the problem.
Fabulous. Thank you for your hard work on this. I know it's been a bill in progress. Questions for the sponsor? We've got John Cook with the Alaska Auto Dealers Online, and also Ed Sniffen for questions from Department of Law. So, further questions for Mr. McKinster. Representative Gera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm considering offering an amendment, and I suppose I should talk about it so that the folks online get a chance to say something. They're both familiar with the issue.
Okay.
And I think probably what I'm going to do is offer it for a discussion. I haven't had a chance to speak to the sponsor of the bill, but then offer it on the floor. So.
Did he receive a copy? Sean, can you make sure that...
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I have a copy of it. I've looked at it.
Here's the issue, Madam Chair. There's also a practice among some car dealers and some banks, but some refuse to participate in the practice, that is called a dealer reserve. And in dealer reserve, the car dealer writes a loan document for the consumer and arranges financing. And it purports to come from a third party, and it really does. So it'll say, financing through First National Bank or financing through Credit Union One at 6% interest. And the consumer rightly assumes that that's the interest that's being charged by the bank. And in the article you have attached that I passed around, in fact, in many of these cases, the bank is not charging that interest. They're charging a lower interest rate. And the consumers don't know that. And so what this amendment would do would be to say, if the dealer is keeping a portion of the bank interest, the consumer should be notified that the dealer is keeping a portion. It might be hard to calculate what exact portion, so we don't say that they have to calculate what exact portion. But if they're keeping any portion, then the consumer just has to be notified on a sheet of paper where the consumer signs off. That won't stop the deal. That won't prevent the car dealer from charging that amount. That won't prevent the car dealer from entering into an arrangement with a bank like that. It'll just notify the consumer that the car dealer is keeping a cut and maybe let the consumer know that if they might want to consider alternate financing, or they might be very happy with the financing that's offered to them. So it doesn't interfere in any contractual relation, doesn't interfere in any business relationship. Frankly, if you get that far in a car deal, you're going to buy the car. It just notifies the consumer they might want to shop around for a better bank rate. And this might be a good bank rate. So all it is a disclosure form requirement. And I suppose I'd like to hear any rational reason why why the industry might oppose this, I wanted to toss this out for consideration right now.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and have the first, I want to hear, if you're prepared, a response from the bill's sponsor's representative, but then John Cook, I guess, in particular online, when you're making your remarks regarding the bill, if you want to respond to the potential amendment or the amendment that will be offered by Representative Guerra on the table. So did you want to make some remarks?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Guerra. The sponsor was hoping not to have this bill change substantially. That sounds like a policy issue, whether the merit, deserves consideration or not. It's a policy issue. We've worked so hard. We've gone through so many provisions of this bill that sponsors kind of leery of putting anything into it that could actually, harm the passage of the bill. This happens. It'd have to go back for concurrence on the Senate side also. And after all the work that and every time there's been one or two words changed in this, we've had a problem, and we've tried to work out for, the best of all parties involved. So I think the sponsor would be really, really leery of trying to make a change like this this late in the game. Also, I believe it would require a title change. After I spoke with the Department of Law, the pledge drafters previously, and they thought it might need a title change to put either this part or one of your other statute language you were looking at earlier. And so that's leery also. So the sponsor would not like to see this amendment put into the bill.
Okay. It's a position of the bill's sponsors, Representative. Okay. Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have, on a different subject, I have handed out the statute that's being repealed. And the members, maybe, Shalon, do you have a copy for Ryan? Here, thanks. You've got one. Okay. You've got one. It looks like we have got here in the bill. We are repealing subsection B, and we're putting a part of that into subsection A, that you have to have a current sales and service agreement with the manufacturer. But the remainder of sub B is not going to be there at all. And that, to me, is major protection for the consumer, because it requires that if it's possible, the work must be done in a reasonable distance from the dealer's place of business, which means presumably of some convenience to the consumer, I would assume. But no longer is that going to be required, so that if this bill passes in its present form, the agreement could say you got to send it back to Detroit, Michigan to get it done, which would make it cost prohibitive and very inconvenient for most of us in Alaska. And secondly, it doesn't provide for the alternative, which is in B2, that instead of that, you could get a rebate to cover the cost and replacement, the cost of repair and replacement, if this can't be done locally from the dealer's point of view. And both of those are, as a practical matter, very important consumer protection. And I have real problems with repealing that. Why in the world are we repealing that when that's so important for our consumers?
To the chair, Representative Gruenberg, those were tied in, and there was like it had mentioned before, that was all tied into the gray market vehicle. If you have a current sales and service agreement with a manufacturer, you're already required to buy their sales and service agreement. So if you're a dealer in the state, you're already required to fulfill the function of fulfilling warranty work within a reasonable distance of your place of business. That's already been there.
Through the chair, there's no requirement in the law. They could change those agreements. Those agreements are between the auto dealer out of state and a large dealer here, between the manufacturer. This will not allow them to change that agreement in the future. And we have seen so many cases where, particularly in this day and age nationally, consumer protections are watered down. This is in the law, and they can't do that. There's nothing to prevent them under your bill for changing that agreement. That's not adequate, in my mind, to protect the consumer.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that understanding that can be made, that argument they're going to change it. The problem we see with this currently as is, you're requiring the dealer to fulfill an obligation that they don't have an obligation. The warranty is not between the dealer and the car owner. It's between the dealer and the manufacturer. And currently, the dealers fulfill that obligation with an agreement to have a sales and service agreement. I think it would be more appropriate, if that was your concern, to actually have something in here dealing with the actual manufacturer. The warranty isn't between a contract between you, the car owner, and the dealership. It's between you and the manufacturer. The manufacturer just requires to achieve that their obligation. They require anybody that has their license to perform that, and then the dealer pays back the dealership. The dealer is not doing it out of their good heart, faith, effort. They have, as obligation of their sales and service agreement, they fulfill these warranty duties, and then the manufacturer pays them back. So the argument, I can understand that, and this has been discussed before, as you may know, and that would require, it's obviously a policy choice, but I think that would require that decision we made, should we actually step out of this and change that agreement between the obligation between the warranty person and the car owner.
It seems to me, Madam Chair,
Representative Gruenberg,
we have a bill which accomplishes two things, but the thing that it's being sold to do is only one of those things. It seems to me that the real thing that they want to do, that is the problem, is the change on line 7, that that you... I'm not sure. I was going to say it's the phrase or current model. I mean, it sounds to me, and I'm going to ask Madam Chair, Mr. McKinstrom, to start again what you started out by saying. That is the problem you're seeking to correct in the bill. You were, as usual, too quick for my slow brain. And if you would, I'm serious here, because I didn't follow you. Madam Chair, would you mind if he just repeated what the problem is that we're trying to cure?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair. Yeah, the problem is that no people can sell, currently can sell a current model used vehicle. Unfortunately, if you just take that language out of line A and leave it in line B, you've just created a monopoly for new car dealers to sell used vehicles that are current.
I'm not talking about the cure.
Okay.
The problem is that a dealer can't sell what kind of a vehicle?
A used current model vehicle. And Representative Gruenberg, the chair, I apologize. I should have probably have defined that better.
What is a used
current
vehicle?
For example, Representative Gruenberg, let's say you went in to buy a 2006 Ford Taurus. You drove it off the lot. You and Carla had it for, I don't know, Kayla, probably for a week or two, and you decided this really doesn't work for us anymore. You returned it back. Now you've got a used vehicle, but it's a current model vehicle.
Madam Chair, Mr. McKinstrom, either one of you or anybody, why legally can't they do that now? What is there in the law that prevents them?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, basically this right now actually says they can't. Current statute, a person who does business as a dealer statement offer to sell or sell a motor vehicle as a new or current model vehicle unless the motor vehicle retains a manufacturer's certificate of origin. There's no used current model vehicle that retains a manufacturer's certificate of origin, first of all. Once that's licensed, that disappears and goes to the state.
And is there another problem, because we can cure that, is there another problem too, Brian? Or is that the only problem?
That's the main problem. There's also a problem in number two.
Okay. Well, let's deal with the first problem first.
Representative Gruenberg, is it your intent to rewrite the sponsor's entire bill right here today? I mean, do you have a problem with the way the problem is being resolved in this bill?
I do.
Okay. And what's your problem?
Representative
Guerra?
I could speed this up. I mean, there's either a problem the way it's drafted or there's not. And Mr. Sniffen from the Attorney General's office is awfully sharp about this stuff. And I would, it might speed things up to get his input whether this bill as written solves the problem as represented or doesn't. And at least his input might speed things up.
Is he on the line?
Yes, Mr. Sniffen, you want to weigh in?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Rescue Ryan.
My name is Ed Smith, and I'm with the Department of Law here in Anchorage, and my duties include enforcement of Alaska's Consumer Protection Act, and including this particular provision. And in response to the question that was immediately raised, that the bill has drafted fixed the problem we have with dealers selling current model vehicles, the answer is yes, it does. It does that by removing the language, as Mr. McKinstrom suggested, for a current model, because as the Chairman McGuire mentioned, once you have a new vehicle that has been sold and as soon as it's titled, you lose the certificate of title. And once you lose the certificate of title, the current statute forbids anyone from selling it as long as it's the current model year. So if you're a car dealer or a consumer and you're in possession of a 2006 Ford Taurus, for example, and the 2007s are not out yet, you have a difficult time trading that into a dealer, and dealers can't sell them. So this bill does fix that problem by removing that language.
Does that answer your question? Representative Gruenberg.
No. Mr. Sniffen, this is Max Gruenberg. The problem that I have is that although it may solve that problem, it repeals subsection B, which provides important consumer protections. And what I'm thinking is whether we can solve the problem you have stated, and Mr. McKinstrom has stated, without repealing subsection B, or, you know, the guts of B. And what about if we were to say, to redo sub A, to allow, to say that basically the person who does business, blah, 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 may not offer to sell a motor vehicle as a new model motor vehicle unless the motor vehicle retains the manufacturer's certificate of origin. That would eliminate the problem from sub A, and then we could do the something else to sub B, because I see it also contains or current model. We would have to do something with B, but is there a reason? Let's just focus on B, folks, for a minute here, if I may, through the chair. Is there a reason, if we made that cure in sub A, why we couldn't leave sub B the way it is, or do we have to make another change to sub B to deal with current model motor vehicles?
Through the chair, Representative Rosenberg, that's an excellent question, and I think I have an answer, and it may just come down to a policy question for the committee to decide, but to fix sub B in the way you suggest, Representative Bloomberg, if we remove the phrase current model out of sub B, then we're essentially left with new car dealers not being allowed to sell new cars unless they are able to perform service work. And as Mr. McKinster mentioned, every sales and service agreement, every modern sales and service agreement between a dealer and a manufacturer requires that the dealers perform that work already. So it didn't seem to make sense to remove the phrase current model and then leave the rest of B in, because it just didn't have any application. Now, the second question you raise is, well, if we left current model in there and did something with B to provide the consumer protections you mentioned, what essentially we would do is we would allow or require used car dealers to offer repair service to consumers who buy a current model used car for a very narrow and specific type of car. This whole phrase, used current model vehicle, refers to a very small number of vehicles, and used car dealers essentially would be prohibited from selling those cars if they had to provide the service and warranty work as the section suggests they would. So in order to allow consumers to sell these cars and allow dealers to sell them, it made sense to revise the statute as the sponsors have suggested.
Madam Chair, if we were to simply eliminate the phrase or current model motor vehicle from both A and B, and that be the only change in the law, then we get rid of the problem concerning current model motor vehicles. And that's a very small number of vehicles, and that would cure that problem. The only other issue that you and Mr. McKinster have raised to me today here in this committee says, well, these people have these agreements, and they may not be able in some parts of the state to do what's required here, but it seems to me that what the law is currently, they either have to do the vehicle, to do the repairs and replacements, or give the offer to give the buyer a rebate. Is that not what is currently contained in these agreements between the manufacturers and the dealers? Isn't that in the contract now?
Through the chair, Representative Bruinberg, the contracts that I have seen, and I've looked at a number of them just to assure myself that the service requirements are contained in the modern franchise agreement, don't have the provisions for rebates that our statute has, because all of them have the requirement that if you're going to be a new car dealer for Honda or Chevy or Dodge or whoever it is, you are required to have a facility that has a shop that has the equipment and tools and the trained personnel to provide warranty service for that vehicle. And if you can't meet those conditions, you just don't get a franchise agreement. So the rebate portion of the statute I haven't seen in any franchise agreement, but the sales and service portion of the modern agreement requires dealers to provide this kind of service.
So if I may follow up through the chair.
Representative Groom, sure.
So let's say I buy a car, a Saturn or something, in Anchorage and have it shipped to my home in Kodiak or in Unalakleet or wherever, where they don't have a dealer or it's far away. this law currently gives Alaska consumers more protection than they would have without this law under the agreement. But if we remove this protection, it may cost the dealer something, but it actually does lessen consumer protection. And right now, under current law, they would be getting some money back so they could get this work done. And I am reluctant to do that. Since that is the current law, I don't like to see consumer protection rolled back. This is a situation where the dealer benefits, but the consumer will pay more.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I don't think it's the state of the current law that if you bought a new Dodge Ram pickup truck in Anchorage and you flew it to Kodiak, that you know, the dealer in Anchorage would be required to transport your vehicle back to the dealership for repair. I believe you would have to probably do that on your own because the place you purchased the vehicle from was in Anchorage, and the Anchorage dealership had the facilities, and they could repair the vehicle within a reasonable distance of their facility. It's not necessarily key to the location of the ultimate destination of the vehicle. So I'm not certain that there is any real reduction in consumer protection from that perspective.
Okay, so then if I may, through the chair, if we were to, assuming you're correct, and we eliminate the rebate thing because we're saying that it's your fault, your responsibility for transporting the car to Kodiak. So why should the dealer have to transport it from Kodiak, et cetera? And they don't want to give a rebate, they just want to perform the service work in case they cannot do it. Or arrange. I mean, it seems to me sub 2 gives the dealer a little additional out that they don't have otherwise. It is if they cannot or won't perform the work where they are that they could offer to pay for it. I mean, that would be up to the dealer if the dealer doesn't want to do that. But why not have this in the law, at least something in the law, so that they can't change their franchise agreements? This protects the consumer in case they do change their franchise agreements. Mr. Sniffen?
Sorry, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I suppose there is always that risk that a manufacturer and a dealer might change the terms of their franchise agreement so that the dealership would not be required to perform a specific warranty repair. It's just that I've never seen that happen, and I don't know that as a consumer, as soon as I found out that was the case, I would be very willing to do business with that dealership. So I don't know that changing this law is a huge risk to consumers and that in fact is going to happen. But I think you're correct, and that's always a possibility, but I think it's just a very minimal risk.
Because it seems to me that although in the legal sense, the consumer is a third-party beneficiary of that contract, the franchise agreement, there is nothing to prohibit them from changing the franchise agreement. Legally, is there? They could change it even for an existing vehicle, and the consumer would have no cause of action to maintain that, would they?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, the consumer would always have a private cause of action for breach of contract or perhaps some product liability claim in tort. But under this particular statute, if the dealer had sold the vehicle to the consumer as a new vehicle, they would be required to have that franchise agreement in place that included a sales and service agreement. And the sales and service agreement, in most cases, would require the dealer to repair the vehicle. And the extremely rare exception where there might be one consumer transaction that involves a repair that the dealer just decided they didn't want to do, perhaps the statute as currently written might protect them. I've never seen that happen, and I don't know that it is such a huge risk that it concerns me as a consumer protection advocate. But I understand what you're saying, that is a risk.
With that, Madam Chair, I am uncomfortable with repealing this, and what I would do would be to ask Mr. McKinster if the sponsor would strenuously object if, instead of the language of the bill here, we simply eliminated the phrase from paragraphs A and B, quote, or current model motor vehicle. That would retain the protection, yet I think cure the problem with respect to the current model motor vehicle. And I wonder if that might be acceptable.
Representative Wilson.
Could I ask?
Representative Wilson first.
You know what? I think if you take that, would it work if you just eliminate or current model? Because if you eliminate motor vehicle also, then the sentence doesn't make sense.
Yeah, okay, current model, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. McKinster?
Representative Gorenberg, through the chair, this exact issue came up in the last committee, and the sponsor wasn't comfortable making the change, so that's going to be a policy call by the committee. The bill sponsor didn't want to deal with that change, and a good point was brought up by yourself, but it's somewhat of a policy issue, obviously, by the conversation we've had, and the sponsor is really leery of getting into some discussion outside of fixing what the current problem was. Like I said before, the specific thing, the specific knockout of number two that you had referred to, actually is referring to people that claim to sell cars new, gray market cars, and saying, but they were being sold as having warranties, and this basically was the way of dealing with that, saying, well, if you're going to offer this car as a warranty, it's gray market, courts haven't decided how that comes out yet. This was to cover that and say, well, if you didn't do it, you had to, if you didn't have a service and sales agreement, you had to pay for those repairs. And so this was specifically tied into the fix-up language I was done before that was far-reaching and didn't work out. So I think Mr. Sniffick could probably refer to that a little bit better than I could, but that was what I was.
Okay, Mr. Cook, you've been patient. I want to hear from Representative Anderson and then Mr. Cook.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Real quick, and I know Ed's online to testify. I work with Ryan and Senator Cowdery on this legislation. The Labor and Commerce Committee opted not to make that change with respect to the idea, and I would recommend that we keep the bill the way it's currently written as well. So if there is an amendment, I would probably oppose it, and I would ask that we keep the bill as written, just personally.
Okay, Mr. John Cook.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is John Cook. I am the Legislative Director of the Alaska Auto Dealers Association. The Alaska Auto Dealers Association supports passage of Senate Bill 273 as presented to you today. This bill benefits both new and used car dealers and the consumer as well, as we've heard. This is an issue that we've been working on for 2 years now, and we're getting real close. Most of you should have a letter of support on file from our association regarding this bill. And I guess I won't rehash too many of the things that Mr. McKinster or Mr. Sniffen have covered, other than the fact that bill passed in 2004 was aimed at curbing gray market vehicles. There was language that was inserted, some of which you've been talking about for during this hearing. And the problem is that the bill caused several unintended consequences, which harm dealers and the consumer. And, you know, we've heard, for example, right now, I am selling and have been for 2 months, 2007 GMC Yukons. The 2008s won't come out until August of 2007. So those vehicles that I'm selling right now are going to be current model. The vehicles I sold to customers will be current model until August of next year. Obviously, if the consumer wants to trade that vehicle in to a Ford dealer, or Dodge dealer, or any other dealer, they're prohibited from doing so. And, you know, were Mr. Sniffen to enforce the statute, you know, we would have to financially take into account the fact, or, you know, if another dealer took it, they would have to hold that vehicle for nearly 18 months. Mr. Sniffen has, you know, seen the flaw in the bill and has chosen not to enforce it. That doesn't mean that that's not the law and that he couldn't start enforcing it tomorrow if he didn't want to. Obviously, this would be, you know, harmful to dealerships and the consumers, but nonetheless, it is the current statute on the books. It's just not being enforced. And, you know, none of us in our association, we certainly don't like being in technical violation of the law. And that is one of the reasons that we've you know, looked at trying to revise AS 0866, is because of the fact that there is a technical issue of non-compliance of the law here. You know, the other thing that it does, I guess, as well is, you know, is it does allow protection to the consumer of the new vehicle on the warranty issues as well through the manufacturer's warranty. To address Representative Groomberg's question, you know, all of our sales and service agreements require, and I have four of them, the four manufacturers, they all require us to provide sales and service to the customer. So, you know, those issues are already covered under every dealer agreement that we have, and we've got four of them. So, I guess in summary, I guess I'd like to say that, you know, we've been working on this issue for a while. We've gone around and around through five or six different iterations. This is the first time that we've gotten, I guess I would call, all three parties together, the new car dealers, the used car dealers, and the AG's office, and we've come up with something that everybody can live with. And nobody's 100% happy, but everybody's probably 80 or 90% happy. And it is a definite major improvement over what we've got now. And I would urge you all to support passage of this bill in this committee and support it when it comes to a vote on the House floor. And I'm available for any questions or anything else that you need from me.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Questions for Mr. Cook? Representative Guerra.
Mr. Cook, you've testified, I believe, on this issue before, on the issue of dealer reserve.
Yes, sir.
So I would just like, on the record, your explanation for why you would support or oppose a provision I might introduce on the House floor. That is the one that you've seen before, which would say that if the dealer is going to keep a portion of the loan interest, and the contract says, well, you know the issue. I discussed it before. Tell me if you don't. But what would be wrong with us saying that you just have to reveal to the consumer you're keeping a cut from the bank so that the consumer would be notified of that?
Thank you, the Chair, Representative Guerra. Yes, you're right. I did testify on this bill for nearly 1 hour, in excess of 1 hour, in the House State Affairs Committee approximately 1 month ago. And my objections to the dealer reserve disclosures were noted then, and our association still retains the same objective or same objections to the dealer reserve disclosures now. I guess I would say that's a separate issue that's being covered under a separate piece of legislation. To keep it real simple and not bog this particular bill down, I can tell you that there are many other industries and many other entities that have markup on funds that they lend. When a bank lends you money to buy a house, they don't tell you what they're borrowing it at, they just tell you what you're getting it at. When you go buy a boat or a snow machine or an RV, all those dealerships have the same dealer agreement with banks that car dealers do, yet under Mr. Guerra's House Bill 383, none of them would be required to have the disclosures that car dealers would be required to under his bill. So I guess to me it seems, it's looking at the car industry only. It's not looking at any other industries that participate in this practice. So that's probably our largest objection. It's not the disclosure itself. It's the fact that we're being selectively picked out here when there are many other industries that do it and that are far larger purchases than ours. Home mortgages, you're not required to disclose what you're buying funds at because they're coming under a federal charter. So the legislature can pass whatever it wants, and if it's a federally chartered bank, they don't have to follow it. That simple federal charter prevails. So I guess I would say that I oppose it. I would have an over an hour testimony if anybody's interested in looking at it regarding our objections to HB 383. And I would strenuously oppose complicating this bill. I guess at this late juncture, it would have to go back to the Senate, and we're getting near the end of the session. I don't know that we would be able to address this issue in that time. And, you know, we're trying to clean up one problem now that all parties agree is a problem, and it has been. And I would just like to see, us deal with each issue separately. And we're more than happy to work with, Mr. Sniffen on any of these other issues or any of the other representatives in the House or senators to address these other issues. But I'd rather do them separately than through this bill.
Okay. Further questions?
I just do a follow-up on that.
Representative Guerra, briefly, because technically this is completely out of order. You realize that. I'm allowing tremendous latitude. You're basically offering an amendment that would put an entire bill into this bill. And so I'm going to allow the final latitude and then move on.
Sure, Madam Chair.
Mr. Cook, I guess I would ask you, to the extent I understand your one concern, which is if you provide fair disclosure to consumers in auto contracts, you might have to do that in other contracts too. But I've never heard any argument for why this would be unfair to car dealers, other than that we're not regulating home sellers and other people at the same time. But if there's some other reason that you haven't mentioned as to why this would be unfair to anybody, I'd certainly like to see it, because I do intend to push this further. And then the whole idea that you'd be happy to work with folks, that's news, that's good news to me. But we've been working on the other issue all year, and I haven't heard an alternative proposal to achieve the same result from your organization all year. So I'm not so sure that I'm going to get anything better at this point.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I guess I would come back to you and say that that prior to that building being drafted, there was never any contact to our association or any of its members regarding that bill. You know, I don't have any problem with fair and honest disclosure. We do it every day. We've been in business for 60 years. This company has. We've sold thousands of vehicles. I've never, as I mentioned in the previous testimony, I've never had any consumer complaints regarding either of the issues you raised in House Bill 383. The Attorney General testified during that meeting that he had never had any complaints regarding our dealership or any of the other dealerships that were members of our association regarding those issues. So, you know, I guess the second part of my problem is, if we don't have a problem, why are we creating, you know, legislation? You pointed out one example, and I don't live in Anchorage. I haven't followed the problem specifically that you addressed down there, but I've never had a customer come to me in 13 years of doing this regarding either of the issues that you have mentioned in House Bill 383. I've never had a complaint. So, to me, there's no problem.
Okay, with that, Representative Gruenberg, do you have a question on a different subject? Representative Gruenberg.
Yes. And I'll be brief. Thank you. Mr. Cook, you heard my discussion with Mr. McKinster and Mr. Sniffen on the repeal of subsection B. And my concern is a legal one, and I understand that people are now covered by the franchise agreement as third-party beneficiaries. My concern is that the franchise agreements could be changed at any time, leaving future consumers out of luck. And that's why I'd like to keep the current protection in the law. What possible objection could you have to that?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I guess, you know, the main reason that number two was put in, subsection two, was to deal with used car dealers. The intent of that language was never to apply to new car dealers. That was put in for used car dealers that do not have service facilities, most of which don't. So, you know, really the dealerships and the current statute require that we have current sales and service agreement, and our agreements already, you know, require us to perform this work anyway. I guess if you wanted to leave the section in on the rebate, again, I can't speak for our association, but I can tell you that speaking individually for our dealership, to me, the section of that law that's written right now, you know, if I can't, I guess I think it could be, it would be one that I think would be subject to litigation. And let me give you an example. The dealer sells a car here in Fairbanks, Alaska. I sell one to a construction company. The construction company has a job out in Shimia, which is a nice 1,500-mile barge ride or 1,000-mile barge ride from Anchorage. What is a reasonable distance? I don't know. I mean, that a reasonable distance isn't defined first, so that would be open to interpretation. And, you know, so I just see it being an issue that there will be problems. Then, As far as that goes, I think it'd be an issue that it'd be one that'd be the subject of disagreement. We don't have a problem with this because we've got dealer agreements in place. And the other thing I would add, I guess, is that there is a situation where the manufacturer changes the terms of our sales and service agreement. The customers that have already bought that vehicle have a contractual agreement with General Motors when they buy the vehicle. So, you know, they are covered. Whether it's at this dealership or something else, they just can't go and eliminate the ability to provide service. If they did, they would have, as Mr. Sniffen mentioned, private causes of action against, you know, GM or whatever the manufacturer is, were they to do that. So when you buy that car, you've got a warranty. It's with it. They've got to honor the warranty.
In final wrap-up, Representative.
Yeah, I'm going to have two questions. Briefly, though, please. And I appreciate this. What is the language of your franchise agreement? How about if we were to put that into statute?
Through the chair, Representative Broomberg, every franchise agreement, I guess, has slightly different wording. They all accomplish the same intent, but I've got four of them, and all the wordings are slightly different. So, you know, that'd be something you guys would maybe want to look at with regard to the manufacturer. But as far as enforcing an obligation of the manufacturer upon the dealer, I don't think that's fair. You know, I mean, we've got our agreements. I can tell you that we don't have a tremendous amount of control in the state of Alaska over how these dealer agreements are drafted. They certainly comply with state law, but you know, it's on a national basis. So that would be my comment, I guess, is if you want to address those things, I think it's a policy issue between you and the manufacturers. It shouldn't have anything to do with the individual dealerships.
My final question, Madam Chair, is to Mr. Sniffen, if I may.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Sniffen, if there is a violation of Section 015B, is that enforceable by your office or only by a private cause of action?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that is enforceable through our office.
I think that is another benefit from having it in law, too. That is, if there is a violation of this, then the AG, and I'm sort of talking to the other members of the committee here, would be able to enforce it on behalf of the consumer. And that's another reason I'm reluctant to repeal this. That's a very important practical protection that the AG can go to bat for the consumer here. Thank you all.
Okay. Anybody else here in the audience to testify on Senate Bill 273? Anybody else online? Okay, hearing none, we're going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 273. Pardon me. So that brings the bill back before us for committee discussion. There is one amendment that's been distributed by Representative Guerra. I'm going to label that amendment number one. Do you intend to offer that amendment?
I'm not going to offer that amendment at this point, but I'm going to work with the sponsor on it. And if I do introduce it on the House floor, I would just appreciate that folks not make the argument that it wasn't introduced in committee.
Okay. We will do so. Further amendments. Representative Gruenberg.
Okay. No, I'm going to offer a conceptual amendment. I do not have it in writing. And it is to, in place of the current language of the bill, it would be in place of the current sections 1 and 2 of the bill, it would simply eliminate the phrase, if the members would look at the current statute, in sub A, we would eliminate the phrase or current model, and in sub B, we would eliminate the phrase or current model, and that would be the total bill. It would in that way deal with the problem of having to hold the vehicle for many months, but it would not eliminate or reduce the legal protection here, which not only is protection in the law, but is also protection in the way the law is enforced. Because as Mr. Sniffen said, having this in statute gives the consumer the right to go to the Attorney General for enforcement, so they don't have to go out and hire a lawyer and do this all themselves, which could be considerable, because if they were to change a franchise agreement, that would basically become a class action, and they'd have to get a class together, et cetera, as opposed to Mr. Sniffen's office just being able to negotiate and deal with this on behalf of all the consumers in Alaska. That's a real protection. So that is my amendment, and I really like the sponsor of the bill, the Senator Rules Chairman, and I don't do this lightly, but this is a serious...
Okay, there's an objection. Any further discussion on the amendment, Representative Guerra?
Thank you,
you. I think this is, I don't want a long answer on this. Representative Grunberg, I think it's okay to get rid of that last subsection, because all that says is you get a rebate to pay you for the cost of repairs if you need a repair. But these are new cars, and every single car of that age on the lot comes with a manufacturer's warranty. So they're already covered by the warranty, so I don't know why you need this additional protection in the law for payment for a rebate.
I don't have an objection to remove, through the chair, if I may, I don't have an objection to removing that also, but I would think that the or is the dealer's choice, and it may be in a given circumstance, if I had taken the car, and I'm not saying Shimmia, but someplace that's maybe more than what somebody would say is a reasonable distance, this would get the dealer out of that argument and say, okay, instead of having to transport, and then we fight on who pays the transportation, I'm just going to give you a cash rebate. And if that's a reasonable amount, it would be much simpler, and it would give the dealer a little bit additional wiggle room. And that's why I suggested keeping it in. But if the committee or you or anybody wants to see that out, that's okay. I just thought that would help the dealer a little bit.
Okay, Madam Secretary, you want to call the roll on amendment number one, please?
I didn't know if that answered it. Just if anybody, did that answer?
You void the roll? Representative Grunberg?
Did Representative Guerra want to?
Representative Guerra?
I guess maybe it's too late in session. I'm not convinced of the need of the amendment.
You want to offer, I'll accept that as a friendly amendment. Do you want to offer that?
No, I just don't see the need for the amendment that you're offering. But that's just
a whole amendment. All right.
Madam Secretary, you want to call the roll, please, on amendment number one to Senate Bill 273.
Representative Guerra.
No.
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Cott.
Is that excited?
No. One yes.
Okay, and so the amendment fails. That brings the bill back before us. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 273 with attached recommendations and zero for some.
Okay, is there an objection to moving the bill out? Okay, hearing none, Senate Bill 273 is moved. Thank you for your patience, Mr. McKinster. Thank you, Mr. Cook. Thank you, Mr. Sniffen, as always. Okay, we have one final thing on the agenda. I'm mindful of the clock because Labor and Commerce needs to meet. I'm going to bring it up, and we're going to see where it goes. If it starts getting too lengthy or controversial, I'm going to set it to the side. Okay, Senate Bill 249. And that's with all due respect. We've just got two members, the chair and another member of a committee that we hold over every day. So,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Smith. I'm staff to Senator French. In June last year, a domestic violence call in Senator French's district resulted in a hostage situation, a shot fired at the police, and eventually the arrival of a SWAT team to the neighborhood before order was eventually restored. Some days later, a neighbor noticed the defendant back in the neighborhood near the house. The neighbor knew that the man had likely been ordered to be staying away as a condition of bail. When she called the police, their response was that they didn't have access to the conditions of bail and so had no legal way to tell the man he couldn't be there. In subsequent meetings with court and public safety officials, it's clear that there's an interagency group that started the process of providing important public safety data in a way that law enforcement agencies can access. So Senator French has introduced Senate Bill 249 to ensure that conditions of bail are specifically provided for as part of the criminal justice information system, since those orders often restrict otherwise legal behavior, such as driving a car or being in a particular physical location. In Senate Judiciary, another provision was added to include conditions of probation and parole and for similar reasons. The bill does not seek to establish a particular timeline. It seeks to ensure that over time these specific issues are addressed. The agencies affected are all fine with the bill, and I can answer any questions that the committee has.
Questions for the bill's sponsor's representative? Okay, hearing none. Is there anybody else here in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill number 249? Anybody online? Okay, hearing none, we'll close public testimony on Senate Bill number 249. Is there any further committee discussion? Okay, is there a motion?
I'll move the bill.
Representative Anderson.
I move Senate Bill 249 based on the detailed and thorough and assiduous analysis and gauntlet we call the Judiciary Committee out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay, is there an objection to that motion? Okay, hearing none, Senate Bill number 273, pardon me, Senate Bill number 249 has moved. Thank you very much, and we're adjourned.